Greetings and welcome to this edition of the MERS Monday podcast. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter. We got a special edition today. I'm joined by Representative Jim Townsend from Royal Oak and Charlie Owens, the executive director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses here in Michigan. We're going to talk about the graduated income tax today. Thanks, guys, for participating in today's podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Representative, I wanted to start with you here. You are pushing hard this year on a graduated income tax for the state of Michigan. Why don't you explain to our listeners what you have in mind?
Well, what I'd like to do is enact a policy that would cut taxes for 95% of Michigan income taxpayers and ask people at the top of the income distribution to pay more in income taxes, so that we can offset the really unfair system we have. The sales tax is a huge part of the revenue we raise here at the state for everything we do at state government. And it falls especially hard on middle and low income people. Somebody earning, say, $30,000 a year pays more than six times as much of their income in sales tax as somebody in the wealthiest 1%, say somebody making $500,000-$600,000 a year. And the income tax is really the only way to balance that out. So my proposal would establish a series of rates within our income tax system where everybody pays the same really low rate, 3% at the bottom, somebody earning $20,000 or $40,000 in that range. And it would gradually go up. And basically, people earning less than $80,000 a year, an individual, would see no change or a tax cut, and people and then families, joint filers, would see a cut or no change. Somebody earning $160,000 in taxable income would see no change. Anybody below that would see a pretty significant cut in their income tax, all the way up to $600. And at the other end, people in the top 5%, particularly the top 1%, would see a significant increase in their income tax. But we've set this up so that after this is enacted, everybody would pay the same proportion of their income in overall taxes. That means income tax, property tax, and sales and excise taxes. So right now, somebody at the bottom, the middle and the bottom, pay almost twice as much of their income in state and local taxes. That means income, property, and sales tax as people in the richest 1%. Somebody explain to me how that can possibly be fair. And so, we're trying to fix that.
Okay, so I understand. So we don't have a graduated property tax. We don't have a graduated sales tax. So in order to get the income equality you're talking about, we need a graduated income tax.
In order to make everybody pay the same amount of their income in taxes overall, we need to do something with the graduated income tax. And that's what other states have done. 35 states have a graduated income tax of one form or another. They're not all really progressive. Some are not progressive much at all. But in a number of states, Minnesota being a good example, they're able to offset the unfairness of their sales tax by having a progressive income tax. And the net result is most people are paying a roughly equal share of their income in overall taxes.
This sounds like a great idea, Charlie. What's wrong with it?
Well, like a lot of great ideas, I think the intention is honorable. However, it rarely plays out as Representative Townsend is describing. The problem is, first of all, we just fixed our business tax by preventing small business owners from being double taxed. That is, under the old Michigan business tax, many of them paid their business tax on the Michigan business tax, and then they turn around and got the privilege of paying it again through their personal income tax because they're not C corporations, they're pass-through entities. So they pay their business income tax with their personal income tax. So we did away with, more or less, did away with the Michigan business tax, and now they're paying, if they're not corporations, they're only paying their business tax once on their personal income tax. So the personal income tax that we're talking about is the business income tax for many small businesses. So you're talking about going from a flat rate of 4.25% to something else. And it's graduated based on, as the representative points out, the more you make, the more you would pay. Well, the challenge with that is if you're trying to create jobs, and keep in mind that small business accounts for about half the jobs that are created in the state, if you're trying to create jobs, you really don't want to create a disincentive for those businesses to grow and create jobs. And I'm afraid that's what a graduated income tax does. The other problem with a graduated income tax is if you go on the internet and you Google how money walks, there is an interactive map of the country that shows capital moving around from state to state over a period of years, and it's based on IRS and census data. what you find, and it's not a very pretty picture. It's color-coded with the red states, not being confused with Democrat or Republican affiliation, but states in the red are the ones that have experienced the most flight of capital out of the state over the last decade and a half, and Michigan is one of those red states. And the reason has to do a lot with the old Michigan business tax and other things. But where you see the capital going to are those states that either have a mildly progressive income tax, a flat income tax, or no income tax. So one of the other concerns that we have is if you create a progressive income tax, you will exacerbate this flight of capital from the state. And capital is what creates jobs. We love poor people as much as the next person, but I've never had one give me a job.
So are you concerned at all about this? We've got, he says that we have states who have a graduated income tax are seeing job providers leave.
Well, I haven't seen the website that Charlie makes reference to, and I'd love to take a look at it, but I think the data is pretty clear from a state like Minnesota, where they have a highly progressive income tax. And they actually made it more progressive in the last couple of years. They have an economy we would dream to have. They have a 3.6% unemployment rate. They have a median income that is $9,000 per year higher than the Michigan median income. They actually leave us in the dust. And there was a recent report that showed that since they made their income tax more progressive, they've had a net gain of millionaires. That means more millionaires have moved into their state. People do not move from state to state based on the income tax. That's a myth. The other thing I'd point out is that our proposal would cut taxes for 75% of small business owners in this state. Because, you know, and Charlie's, we agree probably about more things than we imagine. I totally agree that small business is a huge part of the economy and has to be something we focus on. And one of the reasons that this proposal is beneficial is that small business people very often don't take a lot of income out of their business because they're so dedicated to growing their business that they're sacrificing. So they don't have high incomes. We would be offering them a tax cut to help them continue to do what they're doing, which is be an engine for the economy. Now let me make one other point. We're taxing people's income after, for a business person, for example, we're taxing their personal income. This is the income they're taking out of the business. So it doesn't make any sense for somebody to claim that by taxing what they've taken out of the business, we're going to somehow disincentivize them from investing in their business. They don't want to pay the personal income tax. Guess what they can do? They can leave more of that money in their business. There's an argument to be made that a graduate income tax would actually encourage some people to put more money in their business because they don't like paying the income tax.
Now, do you have an idea of the types of rates that you'd like to see in this proposal?
A very specific idea. They're right in front of you.
Okay.
Basically, the rate structure would go from 3 to 10%. So everybody, whether it's Maddie Maroon or Kyle Malin, would pay 3% on the first. And then, Okay. Again, it's not quite as simple as this because we do have personal deductions and things of that nature. But roughly speaking, 3% on the first $20,000 of income for an individual. Mm-hmm. And then between $20,000 and $1 and $40,000 of income, it would go up to 4%. And so on, all the way up to a 10% rate, which would apply to the millionth dollar that somebody earns on taxable income. So the way to think about this really is the effective rate. Because in graduated income taxes, it's an average of your taxes that start at a low rate and then go up as you rise through the income distribution. So the average 1% or the average person in the top 1% of income would pay an income tax of 6.4%. So that is higher than 4.25.
Yeah.
But the reality is they're getting a huge break right now in our system. Right now, and that's what this chart shows, this is the bottom 80% is paying upwards of 9.5% of their income in total taxes, income, sales, and property tax. The wealthiest folks are paying less than 6%, and in many cases, 5% of their income, sales, and property tax. Now, how can that be fair?
Okay, but I'm confused, though, because if I fall within this $40,000 to $80,000 tax bracket here, I'd pay 5%, but I'm paying 4.25% now.
Yeah, but that's an average. You have to average the fact that the first $40,000 of your income you're only paying for. In fact, the first $20,000 you're only paying 3%.
Oh, I see.
The next 20 you're only paying 4%. See, that's how graduated income taxes
work. Oh, I see.
So you have to think of the effective rate. And the effective rate, even for somebody who's a millionaire way up here, depending on how many millions they earn. But I'll put it this way. It is mathematically impossible for anybody, I don't care if you're Warren Buffett, to pay an income tax in our state of more than 9.99% under our proposal. Because it maxes out at 10%, and even Warren Buffett would pay only 3% on the first 20 grand. You understand?
I understand. So, Charlie, it seems like it would make sense to give working people a tax break, wouldn't it? I mean, we're talking about eliminating the earned income tax credit. And under this proposal, I would pay less in the income tax. Why wouldn't I want to sign up to this?
Well, that's a good question. Back in 2010, we actually polled our membership on a lot of these kinds of tax proposals. At that time, we were looking to change the tax structure in the state, and it wasn't just the income tax. We were looking at sales tax, and we were looking at property taxes and other things. And so basically, we queried our members, small business owners, and we made a case to them, because this is one of the proposals that was being discussed, that would you be willing to trade a progressive or a graduated income tax in return for eliminating the Michigan business tax, which, of course, they hate. Okay. They hate it more than a single business tax, which that tells you how bad it is. And the answer was no. They were not willing to trade for a graduated income tax. And the numbers were about between 50 and 60% opposition, which is less vehement opposition than if you just asked a straight up, would you support a graduated income tax? Then you get an opposition that can get up into the 70 percentile. So it did move the needle back a little bit, but they still were very distrustful of a graduated
income tax. Now, why is that?
Well, I think it's because you've got a couple of issues here, and I guess I'd have to ask the representative, would your proposal bake these rates into the constitutional amendment or leave those up to the legislature to set?
No, my proposal would bake it in the Constitution. So, and one of the appealing points about this, I think for perhaps many of your members, I mean, I wouldn't purport, to speak for them, but one of the things that caused our, we did some polling on our proposal, and 66% of Michigan voters said they would support this proposal, they would vote for this proposal. And it was a representative sample of Michigan voters statewide, people likely to vote in 2016. And one of the reasons I think they liked it so much is it would take away from the legislature the power to manipulate our income tax rates. It would lock into the Constitution a graduated system and a system that would have a net effect of equalizing the tax burden for everybody across the state. That's what this chart shows.
So would this raise revenue then for
the state? It would raise $700 million in new revenue. And at a time when we are struggling to figure out how to pay for our roads, how to maintain, and frankly, I think, do some more investment in public education and keep cops on the beat and firefighters protecting us and so on, we need more revenue. And, this idea that we're paying, in an aggregate sense, more tax than we should, I would just point out that, there's a thing called the Headley Amendment that was enacted way back in 1978, and it says that state and local taxes may not consume more than 9.49% of overall state personal income. We're way below that. We are below that to a tune of something like $10 billion. We have never been farther below the Headley limit in terms of what state and local government is taking out of personal income in since the Headley Amendment, number one. Number two, that limit of 9.49%, well, look at this chart. Who's paying? Middle and low income people are at or above the Headley limit. Who's not paying? The wealthiest 1%.
But this could still be called a $760 million tax hike.
It is a tax hike on people who are not paying their fair share of the overall burden of supporting state and local government in this state.
Well, Charlie, what do you think of this? Because according to this chart that we're looking at right here, the folks who make between zero and $88,000 a year are paying 9.5% of their household income in taxes, while the people making $392,000 a year are only paying 5.9% of their personal income in taxes. It looks to me like there may need to be a balancing here.
Well, the folks in the podcast can't see these charts, so I'll do my best to respond to them without a visual reference. But I think it's important to note that whenever we hear a $760 million tax hike and tax fairness in the same sentence, I think we're justifiably skeptical. And if you look at these charts, you'll see that a lot of what you have here are you are blending three taxes. You're blending the sales and use tax, you're blending property taxes and income tax. And while I appreciate that the representative's doing that in order to try and show tax burden, the fact of the matter is, and we also noticed this when we did our study with Anderson Economic Group, when you talk about business taxes, for example, in the state, almost 70% of the taxes that a business pays in this state are not the traditional business taxes. It's the property taxes, personal and real, sales taxes, and frankly, unemployment insurance payroll taxes. Those three taxes alone represent about 70% of the taxes that a business pays. And so you're trying to create tax fairness by doing it through a tax that really represents a small percentage of this total tax burden. And I appreciate you can't, it would be difficult to do a graduated property tax and a graduated, I could make a case the unemployment tax is in a way is graduate because it's experience-based, but let's not get off on that rabbit hole. But and you can't do a graduated sales tax. So I appreciate that this is the tax. If you wanted to do that, that's easiest to do. But it is a thin slice of the total tax burden for individuals in the state. And let me also say that we have a graduated federal income tax rate system, and that is the majority of the taxes that most of the taxpayers pay. And what we found through that particular over time, and of course that has changed, those rates are set by Congress, they're not baked into the Constitution, so I do think you make a good point there. We had two rates back in 1986, 15%, and I can't remember, I think it was 15% and 38% or something like that. Now we have seven rates moving through the income brackets. If you slice and dice the IRS and the census data, you find that 10% of the top income earners in the country are paying 70% of the personal income taxes, and the other 30% are paying the remainder. The other 90% are only paying 30% of the income tax. So we already have a pretty graduated, progressive federal income tax system. And the challenge with the states doing it is I come back to my concern about capital flight. Now, you've already got a situation, if you want to look at it globally, nationally, where you have this very progressive federal income tax system, and we are witnessing, and now we're talking really big rollers, really big money people that are actually leaving the country with their money. Now, I don't think that that's as much of a concern at the state level, but what is what I pointed out, and that's capital flight from state to state. And if you impose a very progressive graduated income tax here, I think that you're going to see a lot of capital flight over time. Now, I think the representative made the point that people leaving for the income tax system is a myth, and I mean, I wouldn't necessarily agree with it, but I wouldn't dispute it because I think then you'd have to look at you get into the battle of the studies. But capital flight is real. Now, is that people or is that money? Well, it's people's money. And so even if they maintain their residence here and say, okay, I'm still going to be a Michigan citizen, but again, when you are talking about people with a lot of money, they've got a lot of options that the average person doesn't have. And moving their money around is one of them. So they may stay here and move their money to other operations or other places in other states where that money is treated differently.
Now, do you have studies on this, or is this theoretical?
No. If you go to How Money Walks and you Google that, there's an interactive map, and it's based on IRS and census data that shows capital flows between the states. And if you click on Michigan, it will show you capital inflows and outflows by county. So you can not only see how capital moves countrywide, you can see how capital moves in the state of Michigan. And let me just say one more thing. I mentioned how Michigan doesn't fare well in the period that study examines, which is about a decade and a half, because the data is only good up to 2010 because mm-hmm. it lags. If you click on Michigan, you will see the same phenomena of capital outflow from counties where the cities have a personal income tax. So it's no coincidence that capital is being moved away from areas that have, cities that have an income tax versus municipalities that do not. And at the state level, states that have an income tax or a highly progressive income tax to states that do not.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. I mean, again, I haven't seen the website that Charlie's referring to, and I definitely am interested in looking at it. But from the sounds of it, you know, there are 1,001 variables that will influence capital inflow and outflow within a state, within a county, within a country, and between countries. And so to suggest, you know, it's the old thing you learn in Statistics 101, and I've studied a lot of statistics. Correlation is not causation. Two things that vary in the same direction may have nothing to do with each other from a causal standpoint. So there's no proof that I've seen from what Charlie has said that it is a graduated income tax that is the cause of this capital outflow, if indeed it exists. So, I mean, I think it's a debatable point. Maybe I'll take a look at his study and we can come back and talk about it again. But I think an important thing to point out is the federal government does, yes, have a graduated income tax. And, you know, it works pretty well. Why should we have one at the state level? Well, there's really more reason at the state level to have a graduated income tax to offset the regressive, unfair taxes that we levy on everything else. There's no sales tax at the federal level. There's no property tax at the federal level. The sales tax in particular is very regressive. Again, as I mentioned, 6 times as regressive, 6.3% on our low-income folks, less than 1%, 0.8% on our high-income folks. That's what the sales tax does to people in our state. We don't have that at the federal level, yet we have a graduated income tax. So the way to offset this unfair system is to do this, is to say, all right, we're going to make the progressive, we're going to create a progressive income tax to balance those things. The other thing I would say, Charlie points out that the income tax is a relatively small sliver of, you know, the tax code. It is and it isn't. But one thing we do know is that since 2011, when we did make some dramatic changes to the business tax regime in our state, but really dating prior to that, we've been doing this for 25 years, really. We've been cutting taxes for business. You know, I think the jury is in. It does not work. It has not been improving the performance of our economy. And we've now reached the point where business taxes represent the smallest proportion of our tax revenue of almost any state in the country. We are 48th out of 50 states in terms of how much we ask business to contribute in state and local taxes. You know, the growth, so-called, you know, improvement we've seen in the economy in the last few years is almost 100% about the recovery of the auto industry. A 17 million auto, I used to be in the auto industry, I can tell you, a 17 million auto industry is a dream come true. It is great for the economy. Low oil prices are a dream come true for this economy. It's terrible for Texas, it's great for Michigan. So let's not be confused about state policies and what's been going on the last few years.
Well, I'm always interested how tax cutting and tax credits don't work unless it's for the movie industry, windmills, biotech. Pick your favorite industry. Tax credits work for them, but they don't work for everyone else. I think it's very disingenuous to suggest tax credits don't work, but then support them for specific industries or specific companies. What we've done for 25 years, you're right, we've lowered taxes for some businesses, not all of them. And we've done that by trying to target government, trying to pick winners and losers. And we've seen how well that works. And now we have a situation where we have a lot of these pigeons coming home to roost with this $9 billion of unknown tax credits that, you know, suddenly show up and completely mess up the budget that you folks are trying to do. My members, I'm willing to bet, didn't see a whole lot of that. And as we pointed out in our Anderson Economic Group study, ironically, small businesses are paying a lion's share, now that we're just focusing on business taxes, corporate income tax, and pass-through entity personal income tax. Small businesses are paying a lion's share of business taxes in this state. We paid $800 million in 2014. We're probably going to pay between $800 and $900 million in 2015, while corporate income tax, we're not sure because of the mystery credits. It could be anywhere from $135 million to maybe $500 million.
But you can make the argument, though, this administration in particular has been pretty kind to businesses and trying to give them business tax cuts.
What this administration has done, which in our opinion is very forward-thinking, is try to do away with this silly targeting of tax credits, trying to pick winners and losers, and trying to provide that kind of tax equity across the board for the entire business climate. That's what we support. that's what this administration has been doing, and we also think that's what's been working. Now, it started in 2011, so we're 3 years into it. We messed up with our tax system back, if you go all the way back to the single business tax, we had 36 years of experience with that. I think it's premature, because I know a lot of people are saying, well, where are all the jobs? Well, it's been a whopping 4 years with some of these tax changes. You had almost three decades before. It's going to take some time. But this is a more equitable tax system. You're getting away from picking the winners and losers. Tax credits in a fair tax climate work when they're widely applied and not picking winners and losers. And let me just say one more thing about the income tax real quick. You know, a 0% rate income tax is the most equitable for everyone. And if you don't have a job, that's your effective income tax rate is zero because you're not making any money. So while we can talk about fairness and we can talk about you know, how much someone should be paying, if you don't have a job, and particularly if you don't have a good paying job with benefits, it's kind of a real academic discussion. And my reason for bringing up the capital flight issue and the issue of small businesses being taxed is that they are the major job provider in the state. There isn't any problem the state has that can't be fixed by everybody having a good paying job. And it is a $760 million tax hike at the end of the day.
Well, I think you know, Charlie and I have a good relationship. We probably agree on a few things that are worth emphasizing. One of them is that the mega tax credits and these other tax credits that have been doled out, these massive things that have been done really going back 20 years, haven't been very effective. And that, you know, I think any economist, and unfortunately we don't hear from very many real economists in our hearing rooms here in Lansing, because we don't take advantage of the fact that we've got very fine economists at the University of Michigan and Michigan State. And when's the last time we had somebody from those institutions actually come and talk to us? I've served on the tax committee for 5 years, and we have never had Joel Slemrod, who is the world's leading expert on public finance and taxes and how they affect economies, come and testify before us.
But to his point,
So the point being that I think we agree on some things like this. It's always a balancing act. I mean, the reality is we need revenue. I mean, you know, if Charlie's mentioning, well, let's race to the bottom and get rid of government altogether. Business can't function.
I don't think I said that.
Well, but when you're saying when you're putting us in a situation where you've got to say, well, if you don't have a job, that's, you know, nothing else matters. Well, that's true at the individual level, but you know, we've got a state to run here. We have communities to support. And getting rid of the income tax, yeah, I guess that would be fair with respect to the income tax. The problem is we have to get revenue from somewhere, and that leaves only very regressive and very unfair ways of doing that. And I just point to the state of Texas, which does not have an income tax. This is the tax burden in the state of Texas.
And the chart that you're showing right here shows that the lowest 20% pays 12.5% of their family income in taxes, while the people who make over $500,000 pay about 3% of their income in taxes.
Yeah.
And that's what
people
you're showing.
Texas should be ashamed of this chart. Florida, same thing, no income tax. People in Florida should be ashamed of this chart.
And it's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Minnesota, graduated income tax. They have property taxes, sale taxes, and the rest. It's not perfect, but it's a much more equitable distribution of contributing to the
economy. I think we need a video portion here of this podcast so we can show these charts here. I appreciate all you guys' time.
Yeah.
Just in 15 seconds, I want to wrap it up. This thing passes if it goes on the ballot. A graduated income tax passes in this state if it's put on the ballot because...
Well, because people inherently know our tax system is not fair. People have been struggling for 25 years with declining incomes, and they need help. And it's only fair to ask people at the very top of the income distribution to pay their fair share.
Charlie, this fails because?
Well, I think it's failed before. I think it will fail again. I just think it sounds good, but when people step into the voting booth, I think they're fairly happy with the flat income tax system that we have.
We'll see if voters have this option before them in 2016, a little later. But Representative Jim Townsend, thank you for being on the podcast. Charlie Owens, thanks for joining us here for the podcast as well to debate this very important issue. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. I'm Kyle Mullen. Till next week, take care.